Hi, and welcome to episode 57 of Forecast. Happy Halloween! Boo! Today we're talking with Tom Nowak and Chris Jackson. The topic is Ooth Archive, which is a brand new pre-print server. Happy Halloween! I was a firefly for Halloween.
And I am Mike White, Nature's Editor for Climate Science. That was Vonin, my 6-year-old son, who is indeed going out trick-or-treating tonight, very soon, as a firefly. Today's episode is a bit different. Usually, as you may know if you're a regular listener, I get into some extensive details about a scientist's background in climate science and his or her work in a particular field, but today we're talking with two people who are on the steering committee for the New Earth Archive. You may have heard of Archive. Archive is a decades-old preprint server, largely targeting physics and mathematics, and much less so the earth sciences. But the idea being that you can submit a paper to Archive, and now to Earth Archive, and have it uploaded immediately. So it'll appear right away. You'll get credit for having the first instance of a particular idea or result, and you can get community feedback in this non-mainstream journal format. And then, if you choose to, go on to submit that paper to a traditional journal like Nature Science or an AGU or EGU journal. It's never really taken off in the earth sciences for whatever reason, and we do talk about some possible reasons why it hasn't. But it's a great new initiative. It launched when the show is broadcast about a week ago, and already they have something like 50 articles submitted to Earth Archive. So it's growing, I think, more rapidly than the organizers had even hoped for. And I wanted to do the show for climate science because I think that it's a potentially useful venue through which you could get a lot of feedback and constructive criticism and development on a paper before going to a traditional journal. And in particular, useful if you have a very timely finding that you'd need to get stamped with a DOI immediately. From the publisher's point of view, at least for Nature and Springer Nature, submitting to a preprint archive, Earth Archive, for example, doesn't present any problems. I think people are often kind of worried about that. Like, will it create problems for us? Will we reject a submission because you sent it to Earth Archive before you have to Nature? And the answer is no, that's absolutely fine. So with that, let's get on into the details with Tom Nowak and Chris Jackson. Tom Nowak and Chris Jackson, thanks very much for coming on Forecast today.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So this is a total oddball for Forecast, which, as listeners know, is mostly about climate science and climate scientists. But today we're talking with people from pretty different backgrounds about an exciting new initiative for a new preprint server called Earth Archive. So maybe we can begin with Tom just giving us a brief background about who you are, where you are, and how you got interested in Earth Archive.
Okay, great. Thank you. So my name's Tom Nowak. I'm an assistant professor of computer science. I'm at Notre Dame of Maryland University. We're based in Baltimore, Maryland. So I have a bit of a diverse background. I actually started out in the earth sciences, started pursuing a degree in physics, thought I was going to be a physicist and studying various dynamics of the earth system. In graduate school, got very intrigued by the computing and data science side of things. So decided to switch tracks a little bit, got into computing and pursued that for my PhD. But I still very much love physics and earth science as an application areas. And so through the years, I've continued to work with a number of earth scientists.
Chris Jackson is across the Atlantic in London. Chris, where are you?
I'm at Imperial College, so smack bang in the center of London. I work at Imperial College in the Earth Science and Engineering Department. So I have a background as a geologist. So I'm interested in sedimentology and tectonics, so how the Earth's crust deforms and how the material eroded during that deformation is transported. So I have a kind of a very broad background in that area. But I used to work in the oil industry for a few years and then moved back into academia.
Welcome back.
Yes, thank you.
Now, in the physics side of Nature, I'm actually in the physical science part of the company, but in the pure physics area, of course, archive is a standard way of doing business. And this is the situation in which a physicist would be submitting her research to a preprint server where it could be posted essentially immediately without peer review. And then later on, going through normal peer review in a journal like Nature or EPSL or something like that. But culturally, this is hasn't really taken root in the earth sciences. I field questions pretty routinely from scientists confused about Nature's policies on this. In fact, we have no problem with it at all. But from your perspective, why is there this community difference in submitting or not submitting to preprints in earth sciences versus in physics?
The benefits have not really been seen as much in the earth scientists. I think the traditional way of publishing with peer reviews has just been the norm for so long, and the benefits or advantages of preprints have not been promoted as much as they could. And I think technology also plays a part in that as well. There's been some recent advantages coming out, particularly from the Center for Open Science that we've been working with for Earth Archive, about really leveraging some of the advances in technology to really accelerate the benefits of preprints. And so we're hoping that now's an ideal time to capitalize on that.
Tom, what do you see as some of those technological innovations being that have pushed it forward?
The ability to connect with social media and to really share a preprint via a number of different channels very quickly. Ability to comment and offer interactive feedback via online tools to papers. I think really making it a lot more social and real-time endeavor has really helped to bring it to the spotlight.
Chris, is that your perspective as well, that primarily has been driven through social media?
Yeah, definitely. But what I found even stranger is that some of the discussions, or some of the concerns, shall we say, about earth scientists using something which is very well established in other scientific disciplines, it's not very clear why it hasn't taken root. I mean, the technology, I agree with Tom to a degree, but that technology has been growing along with those other preprint servers in those other disciplines. So it's not something that's been specially put together for earth scientists. And if you think about it, earth scientists are not unique, right? So there's nothing, I don't think, unique about the way we do business and the way we publish that is fundamentally different to how they do it in maths and physics and computer sciences and life sciences. So
right.
I do just wonder if it's, as soon as you light the fuse, something might happen. But it is strange, isn't it? Because we get grants, we do experiments, we collect data, we interpret it, we publish it.
Well, now the fuse has been lit. So Earth Archive launched about a week ago, I believe. Is that the approximate right timeline?
Yeah, we're 6 days old. So yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So just to get it out there, the website is Earth Archive, which is spelled EARTHARXIV.org.
Yes, that's correct. That is correct.
And just checking briefly, it looks like you've already got something like 45 or 50 papers out on Earth Archive. Tom, did that surprise you, this sort of rapid uptake that you're seeing?
It did. I thought it would be a much slower going, at least in the beginning, as we were just talking about. It's our preprints in general have not really taken off in the air sciences. And so we thought we would have to do a lot more publicity, a lot more just really convincing people of why this was a good idea. And so to see 45 in 6 days was really amazing.
Chris, when you've had discussions with people on social media, I know you've had something like 18,000 tweets, so you're pretty active on Twitter. You know, what kind of feedback or questions are you getting from the broader community? Are there any concerns they have about Earth Archive?
Yeah, there's certainly concerns, and those concerns largely arise from it being something new. And even if something's brilliant and it's new, it's going to take you some time to get used to. And we're not even claiming this is brilliant. We know that there are things we are collectively working through, not just at Earth Archive, but in the preprint domain in general. You can speak to people who work with the BioArchive or SciArchive or any of those. Mm-hmm. We're all learning on the job, but we believe that what we're trying to do is going to improve the situation for everybody. So just trying to get people, I think one of the simple things is just getting people aware of the nomenclature. It's just the words, what's a preprint, what's a postprint, mm-hmm, what's a version of record, because we're often so busy buried our head down doing our science, we're not kind of thinking about copyright or thinking about whether we can post things here or there.
Well, maybe we can get into some of those very basic definitional issues that you've just mentioned. What do you think are the two or three most important concepts that people should be thinking about when choosing whether or not to submit to a preprint?
I would say the most important thing is to make sure what, or to be aware of what the copyright conditions are for the journal you may eventually want to submit to. Because remember, the preprint can just live as a preprint and a preprint only on the server and gain citations and gain a lot of attention. But equally, you know, the Kalman value system we have in academia at the moment still values publishing in a classic journal. So you need to make sure that your preprints, you're still going to be allowed to submit it to a journal. And there are tools online to do that. So I'd say that's one of the key things, is to make sure that you you don't short yourself on the chance to publish to a classic journal.
Tom, have you run across people, let's say in geology or in your corner of a physics, where that has been an issue, where they have submitted to a preprint and then have found that they couldn't actually take it to the journal that they wanted to publish it in?
It has come up a few times already. And I think it's just because this is so new that some journals, even though they have those policies, may not publish them online. Some of the information that is online is out of date. And so we've seen a couple of cases where researchers thought they knew the policies, but for one reason or another, it was just not the correct policy. And in other cases, they couldn't even track down the policy.
I should say, in some cases, the journals themselves don't know their policy.
Right.
Which is the strangest things, because these things were kind of chiseled in stone or written in parchment, and suddenly they find themselves surrounded by this technological blast and being asked these terms that they don't understand fundamentally in the publishing houses. So I think it's just very exciting, really.
Are there major publishing houses that have come down definitively saying, we will not consider your paper if it's gone to a preprint first?
Yeah, in one or two journals that I kind of am aware of, they state that preprints aren't allowed. But we have gone to them through the editors and started to try and get them at least internally to have that discussion. I don't know about you, Tom. Have you had that in your area?
I would agree. I think that there are a few that it's considered prior publication and the journal's not willing to accept it afterwards. But it seems, I mean, as Chris was mentioning, it's really, you know, a mixed bag from one journal to the next. But it seems as though they're the ones that outright excluded are, at least it seems to me, are becoming a little far and few between, and that they're starting to at least have these discussions amongst the publishing houses and hopefully recognize the benefits.
I've been talking to a fair number of economists lately, and I realize that neither one of you are economists, but they have this very highly developed working paper series. So essentially all high profile work that comes out in economics goes through these working paper series. So they're submitted there. They can go through actually a fairly intensive review process, but it isn't a formal journal. But even that we find to be okay for Nature. So they can still come to us either simultaneously or after the fact, and we'll still consider those papers, which for that community was kind of a shock. But I know that the benefit that you get there is that it goes through this quasi-formal but very intensive community feedback process that can really strengthen the paper before it gets to a journal. Do you see Earth Archive having that same kind of benefit, or are its main benefits in a different area?
I think that's one of the main areas that we're focusing on, is to get, you know, we're not opposed to peer review, but like you said, I think one of the things that we can provide is helping researchers get the feedback, get comments, and make updates to their paper so that when it does go to peer review, it's a much more polished paper.
It makes me laugh when I think about how highly developed it is in certain areas, and then some conversations I've been having for the last month, in that, you know, these people in economics and all these other different domains, they're not stupid people, and they want to do really good work, and they respect the feedback coming from their peers, and so they're engaged in that process in the open, in the wild, a bit more than maybe we have been historically as earth scientists. But you know, in my view, if I walked into a bar at a conference with my paper and I passed it around the table to people and I left them with a copy, that's effectively the same thing, and said to people, could you email me back within the next week with some comments on the paper?
You know, a big difference between economics and the geoscience meetings I go to, primarily things like AGU, is that it's a very polite society on a comparative basis when you go to geophysical meetings versus going to economics. So it's, I mean, in economics, it's routine that a talk will be interrupted after the first 2 minutes. and that let's say they're scheduled for a 1-hour talk. They won't even get through half of their material because they get so many criticisms Whereas in AG, it'd be rare to get a critical comment in a talk. Other would be like, well, have you thought about this particular uncertainty? But I mean, do you feel that like there's just like a community difference in the degree of criticism that's accepted? And you know, maybe that's a reason that we haven't had an archive that's worked well so far, because, you know, archives are basically about debate, review before publication.
That is a very good, very, very good observation. I don't know. Maybe we are just a bit, not precious, but maybe we're just a bit nervous about, you know, because that's one thing we've noticed on social media in the last week is very much when people have posted preprints and they've tweeted, they've gone, oh my God, I've just took the plunge. I've just like bared my scientific soul to the world by publishing this paper. And my sort of reply has been, you know, if that paper was in a classic journal and it was accepted and it was published, you were also baring your soul. Now,
right.
You're sort of doing that at a different time step. You're doing it a bit earlier than you would, but thinking positively, just think about all the great value that might come from those interactions ahead of that submission. So,
and you know, just for the record, again, Nature itself has no objections to working paper or submissions or from preprint submissions. It's absolutely routine in physics, as we talked about. So, you know, beyond that, the benefits you have from having a more informal review process from a broader community before going to a formal journal, like what else do you see as being the benefit of Earth Archive in particular? Let's just say, like, you know, for climate scientists, the area in which I work.
Access to the research, while it may be going through peer review, I mean, I think we're all familiar with, you know, you send a paper off for peer review, it could take 8 months, a year, sometimes even longer before you get the results back. And during that time, you don't have a citable piece of research that you can reference.
Right.
Maybe you're working on a research grant and you want to cite your work. You're working on another piece of research that's related and you want to cite your other research. So there tends to be this gap where you don't have a formal means of citing your efforts. And so one thing we think that preprints can help with is getting the work out there. It's time-stamped. It has a DOI. Yes, it hasn't been peer-reviewed, but at least there's a record there that's citable and you can point to. And Chris and I have been looking around and been noticing that a lot of funding agencies, both in the UK and here in the US, are willing to accept preprint citations as part of a funding request.
One question I have about that kind of thing, where you get a DOI or a citable index before publication in a journal, you know, the same issue would come up with the European Geophysical Union journals, where they have what's called a discussion format before the paper is formally accepted. If the paper then goes to formal review and it's rejected, then what is the status of the preprint paper? Is that still a citable entity, even though the paper itself was then deemed to be technically non-robust?
I've sort of talked to EGU directly about this issue, and their solution, or one discussion we've had about this, is that if you look around at places that you then may resubmit to, lots of those journals will accept preprints. So you wouldn't, you know, there might be one or two that you may have then gone on to try, which might be then off limits for you. But then there's still plenty of others to go for. So it's actually a case of being aware of that when you submit the paper. So if you go to EGU Solid Earth, where we've got some papers in review, if it gets bounced from there, we could equally then go to, you know, Elsevier Journal of Structural Geology or something else that's appropriate, because they accept preprint. But it's all part of an ongoing education for everybody, I think, about this. Because if it becomes the norm, then scientists are wise and smart, right? In many ways, they will educate themselves when that demand comes.
One additional thing we would like to do with Earth Archive, and we're not quite there yet, but you know, we have this rich source of feedback from the community via the preprint server. We would love at some point just to bundle that up and send that along to the journals to be part of the peer review process. And so,
oh, that's a good idea.
Right. So in addition to the two or three reviewers you get from the journal, we can say, well, here's what the rest of the earth science community had to say about this work.
That, I mean, on the journal side of it, that would present a considerable headache for us, because we spend a huge amount of time checking for conflicts of interest and potential reviewers. So if we had that, you know, we would then have to wade through who these people are, their potential relationships with the submitting authors. So, I mean, I can see it being a benefit, but also an additional fairly huge overhead on the journals themselves. Or do you see a way around that, Tom?
No, I agree. I think there's still a lot of challenges to be sorted out in that area. Yeah, so we're thinking along the lines that, you know, the additional comments you know, multiple perspectives would be beneficial to the reviewers and to the editor. But you're right, there's still some conflict of interest that need to be worked out.
Now, you are both on the steering committee of Earth Archive, but when I was checking the webpage today, there must be about 20 people on the steering committee for Earth Archive, something like that. When you were getting this going, I mean, what were the main challenges or areas of disagreement or discussion that emerged in the steering committee that you had to work through? You know, Chris, any thoughts on that, or any revelations, any juicy tidbits?
Yeah. Just panic and run around in a wild fashion. It was interesting because the advisory board, there's 15 people, that was put together primarily by a Twitter call, because the whole point of Earth Archive that we wanted to be for the community, ran by the community, and you know, the governance provided by those members. The recommendation I would have to people is, do not send a tweet out saying who would like to help. And because you will just end up with 150 people sending you emails and tweets back saying you want to help. So I should have come up with something more organized, which we eventually came to, which was a Google form, which allowed people to sign up. So
there you go. Yeah. Yeah. That one additional step weeds out a lot of folks, probably.
Yeah, no, but it was a really amazing response. And it goes back to what Tom said at the start. The response in the last 6 days has been really surprising. And the response we had for people who wanted to just help for free and wanted to provide steer was really remarkable.
Yeah.
Given that they were basically massing around something, they didn't even know what it was in many cases. People just wanted to learn about this word, preprints.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they were willing to actually invest some of their own time in it.
Now, this is linked to the Open Science Foundation, OSF, right? Sort of hosted on their website. How do the finances work? Is there any money involved in this at all? Who supports OSF? How is the support done for Earth Archive or the other archives?
Well, OSF is a software framework that comes out of the Center for Open Science. They are a nonprofit, and they have their own set of grants which are funding their efforts. So they have some money to keep the infrastructure going, but there's, at this moment, no direct funding for Earth Archive. This has been, as Chris was mentioning, we've done it all through Twitter and Facebook and Skype and any kind of free website we could scrape together. So we're just going all on volunteer effort and open tools right now.
So did you write a proposal to OSF saying we see a need for an Earth Archive, and they said, great idea, let's do it?
Yes, that's pretty much how we got started. They have an online form on their website for any domains that feel the need for preprints that don't currently have one. And so we filled out the form, put together a short proposal telling them, you know, why we thought this was needed. And they got back to us in a couple of weeks and said, great idea, let's get this up and running. And it's really been surprising how quickly it's taken off from there.
Now, Chris, you're in London. The main headquarters of Nature is, of course, in London. So, I mean, me about to ask you this question is kind of ridiculous, given the proliferation of our journals. I don't know, we have like 30 or 40 Nature-branded journals now. But what is the rationale for another archive, as opposed to just encouraging your community to work with the big archive, the physical science, the physics archive?
My feeling is, from having spoken to people before and joined this process, is that Archive was seen as being very much for maths and physics and computational sciences. So it, even though its name was quite all-encompassing, it had over those two decades sort of become the kind of go-to option for those areas, and other areas didn't. So there's small subdomains in Archive of, you know, things which are earth science related, but they're not, you know, people don't readily identify with it. So by having something which was branded as Earth Archive, and this is for the earth sciences, and it's kind of bespoke, if you will, it's made specifically and the taxonomy is constructed for that group of people. And we felt that would be a bigger draw, that people felt they had a space then to use. I think that's been my feeling about it so far.
If there is a climate scientist out there and she's decided that she wants to submit to Earth Archive, what are the steps? What has to happen? What's the paper formatting? What are the kind of the nitty-gritty about submitting?
Sure. Paper formatting, we are very open. We want the barrier to be as low as possible. So we accept Word documents, PDFs. You can pretty much upload whatever format works best for you, whatever you're most comfortable with. The next step is, once you have the manuscript ready to go, you would go to eartharchive.org. You click on the big button that says you want to submit a preprint. It's going to walk you through a couple steps of filling out metadata. Mm-hmm. Authors, co-authors, you want to tag your paper with a couple keywords so that it's searchable and indexable. And then you upload the paper, and one of the things we're also trying to highlight with Earth Archive is that you're then given the option of connecting to software and data sets that are associated with the paper. We're really hoping to make this the norm in Earth Sciences, that the Center for Open Science has given us some disk space on their servers, so you can actually host data directly through them alongside your preprint if you want to. Alternatively, if the researcher has the data already, in a free tool like Dropbox or Google Drive or something like that, Figshare, there's built-in mechanisms where you can directly link to where your resources are there. You can link to any software that you might have on a site like GitHub. And so really, you can connect all the pieces of the research together, press submit, and then hopefully the entire workflow of your research is given a DOI right there on the spot and then made immediately available.
Have you taken, as an archive, any kind of a position about the need for open data or open code? Or at this point, is that open to the individual researcher? Chris, any guidelines there?
We've not mandated that. So I know AGU, for example, has had a few kind of position statements, if you will, about that requirement. Mm-hmm. I personally think it's a really good thing to have, because it allows reproducibility. It kind of makes the kind of scientific process a lot clearer, right, to the outsider, and not just the scientific outsider, but like the community, the public at large. They want to know, sure, what is influencing a climate change policy decision, for example. Where's that data? I might not understand it, but I'd like to know it's there for scrutiny and other scientists have, mm-hmm, looked at it. We've not said that you can't upload without the data.
It sounds like it's a very easy option, and one that probably would become the norm.
I think as the squeeze comes from societies and journals that you have to have it, I think we, mm-hmm, react often as scientists, we react very well to being told we have to do something. And so certainly in the domain I work in, which is subsurface data, so seismic reflection data, a lot of that data is very heavy, very expensive. We don't collect it. We get it from oil companies. So, mm-hmm, there's some very interesting discussions going on in this building here about how we release that data, because it's not ours.
Okay, fascinating. I've had this exact same issue. I can't go into details, but there have been recent submissions to Nature in which some of the data did come from companies that had strong petroleum exploration interests. And they were proposing, essentially after a lot of back and forth, that maybe they could make it available for peer review under a non-disclosure agreement, but that they wouldn't make it available after publication. Is that kind of, yeah, happening in your area too?
We've ignored it for a long, long time. And now, if you turn up to JGR, an AGU journal, and you want to publish a paper about some bit of the Earth's crust somewhere, and that data is belonging to a company, what do you do? This is where we are at the moment, is how much of that data can we yield? The intellectual property, because it's a data set that you've derived some additional data from. So is the additional,
exactly,
data yours,
yeah,
and the raw data the company? So again, it's slightly scary, but very exciting, I think.
So then, let's just assume that you've successfully submitted your paper, you've worked out the data and code issues to your satisfaction. How do you attract people to review your paper? Like, how would a scientist get her broader community to come and look at the paper and give comments? Is it, do you solicit, or do people just show up and review?
At the moment, it's a lot of soliciting. My hope is that as this continues to evolve, that it's more of a mix of both. So each paper, I guess we should call it a preprint, since it's also may include more than the paper, maybe the data, mm-hmm, and the software as well. But that package is assigned a URL. So you are free to pass that around, which would take people directly to your research. There's some social media options built right into Earth Archive, so you could share your research directly from there.
Okay.
And it seems, at least initially, that that's predominantly how word is being spread. We seem to also be attracting a couple users, as the more that we're around, who will come and just peruse and look for interesting papers. And I think as we continue to get the word out there, hopefully that balances out.
Let's just say, for example, that your mortal enemy decides to review your paper on on Earth Archive and writes just an absolutely scathing review. Is this person, first of all, do they have to submit the review signed with a real name? And then do you have any recourse if you have what you think is just a horribly biased, unfair personal critique?
So at the moment, Earth Archive doesn't have a commenting overlay. So this is not a problem we have, because at the moment it's kind of the solicitation is happening outside, you know, via the, you know, you can tweet directly from the page, you can go to Facebook, you can email, but we don't have a commenting overlay where somebody can comment. But that's coming very soon, Tom, as I understand it. It's in the roadmap to come very, very shortly. So that is indeed a problem we might have. Now, the anonymity side of it, that happens anyway, and that's not to say it's good. I believe in open review, but...
Is the intention that when a paper is on archive that it does receive some kind of community peer review? Or is it more that the paper just is there, has a DOI, and then is actually not reviewed in any kind of a formal context? I guess I'm a little bit unclear on that.
So our process at the moment is that the... and we're still kind of tweaking this and formalizing it, but that the advisory committee members would take a quick look through the paper just to make sure that it's appropriate for Earth Archive, that it kind of fits somewhere within the Earth Sciences and is appropriate for publication there. But there's not a formal review in any sense. And so then it just becomes immediately open and citable, with the intention that whomever is interested can go there and can review it, can offer comments in some form or another.
But so Chris, I'm sorry, you were saying that commenting facility is not yet live on Earth Archive, or it is?
It's not yet live on Earth Archive. Okay. So at the moment, that's not an issue, because everything can be done informally. So if somebody sends you an email, unless they send it from an anonymous account, you'll know who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But when the commenting becomes available, then this will become more of an issue. But, you know, like I say, that issue stands already presently in the formal review process as well, because anonymous reviews are still, I don't know if it's common, it varies between disciplines, but quite a few people like it. I personally don't.
Well, I guess the difference would be that in a formal review process at a regular journal, you would have an editorial interface, so that hopefully the editor isn't intentionally trying to assign reviewers who would be inherently hostile to your work, whereas in an open commenting facility like a preprint, that could be the case. Or do I have that wrong?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's why people, I was saying earlier on Twitter, are like, eek, I've just submitted a preprint. It's that. It's kind of a bit more of that exposure. And second, maybe, to that is then just the, you know, there's not that editor there in the way kind of to protect me from any unfairness. Remember that the preprint comments, you're not obliged to respond to the comments or you know, modify things. So
that's different than the EGU process, where you are obliged to respond.
Yes, exactly. So the EGU one is very different. So we've got a paper in there at the moment, and it's incredibly dynamic, to the point where the people who papers we review were all discussing on Twitter, and we kind of got together and we were chatting to try and make the paper as good as possible. And that's what we really want, is civility in the process.
Any other final thoughts on the way to take Earth Archive forward, let's say in the broader geosciences community? Like, what else could traditional publishers like Nature be doing to support this sort of effort?
Just from my point of view, just to say one thing, I think the kind of rubber stamp given by people like Nature saying, we think preprints are good, I think that's going to be so beneficial to us, not just at Earth Archive, but at preprint serves in general. If you recognize that scientific discourse ahead of the paper being submitted to your journal is a valuable thing, they may not listen to two random scientists in me and Tom who have just met on the internet, but they may listen to Nature, and they may listen to AGU and EGU. So, like, that commentary from people like you sharpens the senses quite a lot, and we appreciate the input and your view on that as well. Tom, what do you think?
No, I completely agree. I think, you know, Chris is spot on. Just having that that validation and the recognition from the journals, from the societies, just saying, you know, yes, this is a good thing, I think that's going to be a major step in moving preprints forward.
Well, Tom Narok and Chris Jackson, I really appreciate you reaching out on Twitter to try and get this podcast going. And again, you know, Nature is supportive and has no issue with preprints. And I do think it's a totally underappreciated way that the climate science community can get an initial feedback and initial visibility on their work. So thank you both very much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, great. It's been fun. Thanks for having us.
That was my interview with Tom Narok and Chris Jackson, two of the steering committee members for the new Earth Archive. Check it out, eartharchive.org. That's E-A-R-T-H. ARXIV could be useful for, I think, a pretty broad swath of the climate science community. If you'd like the show, you can subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, any number of podcasting applications. I love getting feedback either on reviews or email, forecastpod@gmail.com, or you can get me on Twitter. I'm at @MWClimateSci. As always, the opinions expressed here are mine and those of my guest. Coming up soon, two exciting, well, exciting to me anyway, interviews. The first will be with Sonia Senevarodny. I mentioned that before, talking with Sonia in about a week or so, so posting in 2 weeks. And then Henri Drake, who's a regular listener, has been involved with an MIT Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute Graduate Student Research Symposium that's taking place November 10, 11, and 12. And we're going to try and get several grad students to do short interviews. It'll be kind of a composite grad student interview, hopefully. And I guess it would be 4 weeks from now. So looking forward to that, and I'll talk to you soon.